the Bureau of Energy Management presentation.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Hooker. I'm representing the Office of Renewable Energy Programs at the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and I'm happy to come and present, give you an update of our activities since our last update at the September Council meeting. To start off, we're just going to do the overview, the state and the regional update on our studies program, and the current state of our outreach efforts. The most recent application that we have received is one for a pilot project in the Gulf of Maine. Statoil North America submitted an unsolicited lease proposal in October. The proposal consists of four 3-megawatt wind turbine generators utilizing a floating turbine design. This is a little different than what we've seen thus far. It's in approximately 328 feet of water and about 12 nautical miles off the coast of Maine. And the purpose is just, a demonstration to demonstrate the commercial potential of the floating offshore design, and it's competing for the Maine Public Utilities Commission RFP. Here's just an overview of where the area is. Off the coast of Maine, I think the potential tie-in line would be up in, I think, Booth Bay in this area. BOEM's most recent task force meeting was held on December 8th in Portland to discuss the proposal. Regarding fishing, there were the task force itself, and during public comment, there were concerns raised regarding groundfish, lobster, and tuna. NIMS was present and presented some preliminary data on fishing effort in the area, and this is just one example of some interpolated data that the Fisheries Science Center has provided. And we're going to be working more closely with the Fisheries Science Center to obtain more of their information directly on, you know, regarding all sectors. This is just otter trawl, so it's just meant to be an example of the type of data that we do have available. The next step in Maine would be to prepare a request for competitive interest. To determine if anyone else wants to develop that particular site. There will be another task force meeting to discuss the request for competitive interest, and that will have a 60-day public comment period, tentatively in the spring of 2012. So that's the next planning and analysis portion of the main proposal that is scheduled. There would still be, of course, following that, if there's a determination of no competitive interest, they would then file a construction and operations plan, and a EIS would be developed. This is a little different than some of the other proposals where there would be a site assessment plan submitted prior to the construction and operations plan. Because this is a small demonstration project, the applicant has indicated a willingness to be able to go straight forward with the construction an operations plan, so that we would go straight forward to an EIS if that is the route that's chosen. At that point, also, we'll publish a notice of intent to prepare the EIS, and there'll be a public comment period associated with that as well. Massachusetts, we're getting close to publishing a call for information and nominations for the area to kind of the southeast of Martha's Vineyard, at which point there will be a once again a notice of intent to prepare an EA. This would have a site assessment plan component to it, and a 45-day comment period there. And then we're anticipating that to really be released soon. So we're tentatively scheduling some general information meetings and meetings with the Massachusetts Fisheries and Habitat Working Groups, Massachusetts and Rhode Island as well, in Massachusetts and Rhode Island in mid-February. For the Massachusetts-Rhode Island area of mutual interest, once again, we've already completed the call for information on call for information nominations there. The next step there is the area identification. The area identification is basically the designation of the wind energy area. We are anticipating that in the near future. We've already contracted the development of the environmental assessment for the site assessment and site characterization work. And as soon as this area ID is completed, then we'll be able to continue with that process. Also in that same area, we are working on the right-of-way, the row there, for Deepwater Wind's Block Island transmission cable. The lead federal agency there is the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers because the project itself is in state waters off of Block Island. But we're analyzing the impacts of the transmission cable from Block Island to the shore. Moving down to the Mid-Atlantic, we're anticipating the final environmental assessment for leasing site characterization and site assessment for New Jersey, Maryland, Delaware, and Virginia will be made available in the near future, early 2012. Following that, there will be a call for information and nominations for Maryland and Virginia. New Jersey, we've already done a call and determined no competitive interest, so New Jersey could theoretically move forward for a lease sale auction at that point once that environmental assessment is completed. Also, we received an unsolicited lease request from New York Power Authority in September, and we're scheduling a task force meeting in the spring of 2012 to discuss that proposal. And here's just a map of where their proposal is in New York Bight. In the South Atlantic, North Carolina, we're still a lot further at the beginning stages of the planning analysis in the South Atlantic. North Carolina, we have had some task force meetings, and we plan on publishing some planning documents in the near future for some potential areas. South Carolina, a task force is still under development. Georgia, we have what we term an interim policy lease application, which means it's just a lease area for one or two blocks where they want to put a meteorological tower under review. And in Florida also, there's an interim policy lease for a test turbine. It's a single test turbine to be moored in the Florida Current to look at potential technologies for hydrokinetic energy production. Along the entire Mid-Atlantic, we have the Atlantic Wind Connect project. The request for competitive interest was published in December and closes on February 21st. And so then we plan a late March meeting, a multi-state task force meeting to look at that proposal. To discuss the comments and responses and the next steps for the Atlantic Wind Connect proposal. And I believe Atlantic Wind Connect did do a presentation recently with the Mid-Atlantic Council. Yeah. So moving on to studies. We have some studies that are currently ongoing. We have our electromagnetic field, that's the EMF, studies that are continuing. We did a kind of a literature review and a look at some of the models. And that study is completed. We also have now kicked off into more of an in situ study in the Pacific, where they have a live cable and a non-active cable, and they'll be looking at fisheries interactions around both cables to look at ground fish interactions with cables actually in the marine environment. Also, the Department of Energy has funded an EMF laboratory-based study, which they have included American lobster in their list of species to be studied in that laboratory setting. Regarding fish acoustic impacts, mainly from pile driving, we have a workshop dedicated solely to fish acoustic impacts in March, and we are close to completing a study on the effects of pile driving sounds on auditory and non-auditory tissues of fish, soon to be released. Some other studies that are just getting kicked off is the development of mitigation measures to address potential use conflicts between the wind and commercial fishing industries. We just awarded that this month. This is going to be kind of a – the model for this was that meeting that was held in New Bedford last fall, I believe, where it was the wind industry and the fishing industry sitting down to determine what things were compatible, what things were not, and give advice to us on developing best management practices and potential mitigation measures that could be used where we haven't been able to completely avoid conflict. Obviously, our primary goal is to avoid conflict at all times, but there may be some cases where conflict can't be avoided, so then what do we do in those situations? These workshops and the final product hope to address that for us and also help us as we move forward in our economic assessments for potential wind projects in the future. That leads us to the second study, which hopefully should be kicking off in the summer, which will be directly looking at the socioeconomic impacts of fishing from offshore wind and energy development. That proposal is still under development, but we hope to award that later this summer. That this should be more of an economic input-output model based on some of the wind energy areas that are in existence. So stay tuned on that one. Regarding outreach, the primary, we're continuing our outreach with the councils and council staff in the development of environmental studies. We also want to continue to work with some of the working groups that have been established by the states. We're encouraging other states to follow the model that Rhode Island and Massachusetts have put together in developing these working groups for us to have that direct interaction on a regular basis, usually in conjunction with all the task force meetings. And, of course, the task force meetings, as I mentioned before, have become a forum as well during the public comment sessions that follow each task force meeting. We'll also be attending the Maine Fishermen's Forum in March, and there will be a panel presentation there that will be discussing offshore wind directly, and we'll be participating in that as well. So at that, I'll open it up to questions from the council. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Brian, thank you for the update. Glenn Libby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the presentation. I just had a question on it mentions develop mitigation measures for use conflict. It's fairly certain that there will be use conflict. So what type of mitigation measures are we talking about?
That's the point of the study, to try to help us look at mitigation. There's some things that the that BOEM can do, and there's some things that BOEM can't do. I think a lot of what we're hoping is that, you know, even if there's a suggested mitigation measure that BOEM does not have the authority to implement, such as maybe some kind of direct compensation or something along those lines, that these facilitated meetings will help to develop those relationships and help the wind industry also have an understanding of what the concerns are of the fishing industry. So even if it's not a particular mitigation measure that BOEM can implement, I think we'd like to know about that and look at possible avenues to, on how to accomplish that mitigation measure. So it's not going to be – it's not necessarily limited to only what we have the statutory authority to do. If that – does that answer your question?
Not really, but I suppose it may be up to the actual developer to work through this process with the affected parties. Could that be something that would happen?
Yes. In some situations, it would be up to the developer because of our statutory limitations on what we have the authority to do. There's you know, opportunities that the state may take as well as part of their permitting process that may be implemented as a result. So, you know, you take for example, I think the you know, Neptune LNG facility. I think some of the compensation measures that were developed as a part of that weren't federal compensation measures. I think it was developed in association with the state through their permit requirements and through some of their things. So I think it's helping to craft what the range of alternatives and what the range of mitigation measures are that and the best management practices as well. And, you know, we'll then try to decide, you know, where those can be best implemented along the process.
Just a simpler question. So there can be some mitigation measures?
Yeah, yes, there will be mitigation measures that we will be able to utilize.
Thank you.
Sally McGee.
Yeah, a couple questions. Again, on the two ongoing studies. Who is doing the mitigation measures study, and when is it going to be complete? Do you know that?
The contract was awarded to Ecology and Environment, and I think we have about a 24-month performance period for that one.
And for the second, the socioeconomic impact study, I know you said that's still in the works, but do you have a timeline for that?
I think that one will be closer. I think closer to a year and a half time frame that we're looking at to complete that, and we're planning to award it in the summer. I don't yet know what the contract vehicle will be for that. It's probably premature to say because we haven't gotten to that point.
So, but the completion of both will be around 2 years from now. Because the second one's going to take a little bit less time to complete even once it's awarded.
Right. I'm anticipating a year and a half to 2 years, yes.
And then one last question on the main state task force meeting. I'm just wondering, just along the lines of outreach, how you're publicizing those meetings to make sure that people know they're happening. I know you have the challenge of working with the states and kind of figuring out what's going to work for them and the timing and all that, but can you just talk about what you're doing to make sure that people know these things are happening?
So you're talking about just for the task force meetings themselves? I think right now we're relying upon the task force members to disseminate some of that information. I mean, we do have you know, interested parties that, you know, obviously the Fisher Management Councils are made aware of the meetings and others as appropriate, but there's not a they're not publicized in a paper or anything of that nature. They're that's not necessarily how they were organized. The information meetings that we did in Rhode Island and that we plan on doing in Massachusetts, those are more widely publicized because they're more of our official EIS process, or rather, in that particular case, environmental assessment process. And so those are more large published information meetings where we encourage everybody from the public to come and present their thoughts and ideas on following the call for information or around this time the call for information and nominations is done, and as well as when a notice of intent to prepare an EA is done.
If I could just make one suggestion on these. So before you're getting to the point of doing an environmental assessment or an EIS, before you're required to publish and kind of push out the information about these meetings, I think it would be helpful for people to, you know, I'm certain that you collect emails and contact information for people, to push that information out to them so that they're not as reliant on their state task force members or on going to the website, just so that there's another opportunity for them to get information about when these meetings are actually taking place.
Thank you.
Paul Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for coming, Brian. Thanks for the presentation. That area for the high wind project, that was chosen by BOEM with coordination with the states? Is that how that – with the state of Maine? Or how did you determine that siting?
That particular site was determined by the applicant.
By the applicant.
Right.
Okay. And so the next step, so the applicant wants to test four wind turbines. Four. And then you said now you go out and you solicit, so there may be more than four in that area? Is that, or?
No, the solicitation is to see if anybody else wants to lease that area. It's in the government's interest not to just lease it to whoever first asks. So whenever we have a request to lease federal lands, we make sure there's no one else that had plans to lease that area. So that's basically what the competitive.
So you're not asking for someone else to come in with wind turbines in that area because we're setting aside that area?
No.
No. No. So what is the next – what is the timeline for all this? When would you expect I work closely with the Science Center to provide the data that you need to do the EISs and all that, but when would you expect to receive public comment on a proposal? When would that be? 6 months away, or
at least 6 months. I mean, I think there's a few things that would have to occur, a few more decision points. There's a component, an outreach component that would be part of the EIS and the scoping and everything that would. So it depends on what you know, what point we do request the information. So it is still, I would say, 6 months to a year at before we even really get down to those issues. I'll just leave it at that.
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian, thanks for the update. You had a slide, I think, related to the main high wind issue on a display of VTR data, maybe. Put that up. It's a concern that I've been growing with me since we went through the Rhode Island SAMP, Special Area Management Plan for Block Island Wind, and on into the area of mutual interest in Mass and Rhode Island, is that we see these sort of initial compilations of information, but they're always incomplete. That is, we see some vessel trip report data, but we never see vessel trip report data layered with VMS data, layered with observer log, with study fleets, and so on. There never seems to be a complete characterization of using all the official information of fishing activity in these areas. What I do see a lot of, though, is meetings with fishermen where come in and draw dots on a map. There's a lot of those going on, so to fill in the gap. But I'm wondering, whose job is it to – do you agree with that characterization that I've made? And if so, whose job is it to do this complete compilation of the official data on fishing activity before we go and ask fishermen to fill in the dots? There seems to be a deficiency here that's growing relative to the information on where and how, you know, what types of fishing activities are being prosecuted throughout all of these areas of potential wind generation, wind power.
No, that's a good question. I mean, the way that we generally operate is there will be kind of this tier one screening. So basically taking that available data that we get from the Science Center or we get from, fishing working groups and that type of thing where we – and this is in the when we're developing the area, when BOEM is kind of controlling the area process, where we try to narrow down an area. And then when we look at the site assessments work, you have to remember that work is only for doing the surveys and doing site characterization. So the impact on fisheries isn't necessarily great at that stage. So we haven't gotten to where we've actually prepared an EIS for actual construction. And the... when we look at actual construction impacts in an EIS, I think you'll see a much deeper – I know you'll see a much deeper data set on what the impacts will be because we'll have a construction and operations plan in front of us to look at, okay, this is where things are going to happen. This is what the spacing is going to be. We just haven't gotten to that stage yet. We're trying to incorporate front load as much as we can at the beginning stages, and I think we're getting better at that. We haven't necessarily been as good as we could have been previously. But I think we're getting better at trying to present as much data as we can earlier on in the planning and analysis phases so we do know what potential conflicts we have down the line. Does that answer your question? That approach of the general screening to identify, to try to narrow down an area, requesting the comments on that, working with the fishing working groups to try to even narrow down that area even further during the area ID, and then, you know, when we actually get to that EIS stage, that construction phase, there'll be more of that assessment of fisheries impact.
Yeah, I get that. If I'm okay to follow up. I get that, and it's seems to me a lot like when maybe the horse has run away already before we look at all the information we have, but we make sure we sit down and have the fishermen draw a few dots on the map and express their concern. So I've made my point for the council.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Brian, for the update. To follow up to Paul's question about site selection and input from in industry, the area off of Maine, the proposed site is highly contentious with the industry. They couldn't have picked a better spot in mid-coast Maine that's more productive for groundfish, herring, whales, lobstering, and recreational fishing. So the follow-through from the applicant and potential modifications to their initial site will be really telling on how we move forward with this pilot project. It can go from being something very good into a complete disaster. So we're kind of standing by, waiting to see how things wash out. We're looking forward to you coming to the forum.
Along those lines, we have, after some of the issues were raised at the Maine Task Force meeting, we have encouraged the applicant to work directly with some of the affected parties that were there to identify what issues were there, so that the applicant could potentially amend their application prior to us going forward with the planning and analysis phase. So we do recognize that those concerns were raised.
Dave Gaethel.
Yes, on this main one. The site that's shown, you mentioned there's going to be a cable come ashore in Booth Bay. Is this cable going to be buried?
Yes.
Okay, so it'll have no impact on mobile gear. They should be able to go right over it.
Well, I can't say that it will have no impact. I mean, we have requirements to bury the cable. There is some, you know, geological formations that may be there that, you know, may change the burial depth based upon what they can, you know, physically do. So, I don't want to say that the objective is to have no impact, but I don't want to say at this point that, you know, we haven't analyzed. We only know the route yet or anything along those lines. So to say there is no impact, I don't want to go that far. But our protocol is that the cable would be buried to minimize the potential impact.
Okay, well, I would just suggest that if the cable's not going to be buried or it's not going to be buried at a depth sufficient to be able to run it over with mobile gear, that route with plus or minus whatever the buffer zone is or whatever be outlined on the chart as well, because that will be an area of impact. It'll become a de facto no fishing zone. You don't want to be dragging up a live electric cable. Certain things don't respond well to a meshing of steel doors, steel wire, and however many volts are running through that cable. I think that needs to be in there and clearly spelled out going forward. Again, to avoid, as Terry said, what could become quickly an unmitigated disaster.
Thank you.
Glenn Libby.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick comment. That slide right there, that only goes back like 10 years. If you go back 20 or 30 years and use the same color scheme, it would all be dark brown.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Any comments, questions? Chris?
Hi, Chris Wiener, American Bluefin Tuna Association. We're one of the parties that was at the task force meeting and raised our concerns and caused a little stir up there. And we got the feeling that things were, you know, yet I know it's an early stage, but it got the feeling like some of our concerns weren't even being thought about at that point. And that's not true, but that was the concern, you know, the feeling we got at that meeting. And Brian's done a good job of reaching out. The concern we have is that a lot of this seems to be out of the control of the government. You know, as you heard, when you hear that the Statoil people are in charge of some of these things, it kind of starts making you worry. And they have reached out to us. We met with Statoil, I think it was about a week ago, with their project manager and a couple other technical people. And a lot of our biggest questions weren't really answered, as like, are we allowed to go through the area? How far will they be spaced out? Big questions like, do they think this can even make money in the long run? It seems like a lot of it's up in the air. One of the questions we asked, obviously, was, and our biggest concern is, four windmills doesn't seem like a big thing, but when we see a company like this coming from Norway and spending tens of millions of dollars to do a test site, our concern is that this could be the first step towards a commercial site. And while four windmills might not seem like a lot, that area is extremely important to tuna fishing, and I know it's important to a lot of other fisheries. So that's one of the best. There was a year where the whole general category was caught within 5 miles of that box, and that's when we had a lot more quota too. So, and that's a hot spot. I mean, it's what we call the kettle is just west of it, and so it's an important area. We have a lot of questions that haven't been answered. I think part of that, rightfully, is that they don't have a lot of the questions answered yet, and I think because it is a very early stage of the process. But we would like to see more outreach, to be honest with you. It shouldn't be up to – I didn't know about this. The Island Institute in Maine was the only reason that any of us even knew about this meeting, because they have sort of a relationship with Statoil to do outreach. It's concerning. I think that it's important to have more outreach because a lot of the guys in Boothbay we know that don't even know this is happening, and it's right outside their port. So one other concern we have too is that in terms of selecting the lease site, from our perspective, it seems that they've picked the closest area. You know, a lot of the rumors going around is that they want to connect into the Wiscasset power grid, and whether that's true or not, no one's really answered. But it seems that they picked the closest area within 12 miles of that point, and it didn't seem like much consideration was given to the fishing industry or other users. So we would just encourage the council to stay involved. I think the questions you guys have asked have been great, and I think that it's important to see, because this is the first step in what could be a huge, eventually, commercial site. And so that's what our biggest concern is. It's easy to deal with three windmills. It won't be easy necessarily, but it'll be easier to deal with three windmills. But what if there's 200? You know, and Statoil wouldn't answer. They said, well, we could do the test here and then do the actual site in Ireland, but that doesn't seem to make much sense to any of us. And when we asked just simple questions like, can we go through the area, these weren't answered. So I hope the council will stay involved in this, because it seems that that's our best source of an area of the government or of the management process that can look out for us, because we need someone that can do that for us, because we can only do so much. And we'll keep giving you guys our input on our meetings, but the whole thing is kind of concerning to us, and I just wanted to make sure that we made that aware to the council. So thank you.
Jim.
Thank you. Excuse me. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seaver Consulting. I was out of the room. Is this the only overhead that you have showing the sighting?
For me?
For any of them, yeah.
There's another one for Maine that's that one. And there's the New York one. I have a New York map, too.
Well, and that's what I was getting to is I currently am sitting or a member of the Fisheries Working Group for the Massachusetts Wind Sighting Programs. And one of the problems that I've had is that each time that this will come before the council or before one of the working groups or one of the public sessions is they show you a portion or a part of the whole picture. You're not getting the whole picture at one particular point in time. You're seeing a snapshot, and it's not really relevant when you look at all the others or consider all the others from New Jersey down to the Carolinas, and you look at this as a project that runs, like I say, from Carolina to Maine now. I think you need to look at the entire scope of the wind process as it's currently developing before you can move and comment logically on one particular portion of it. As was just said, it might only be three or four wind towers at this particular point, But south of Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard, you're talking hundreds. And when you get down off the joint area between Massachusetts and Rhode Island, there's another group. And then when you get further off Rhode Island, there's another group. Then, of course, the New Jersey group, which is just in the area where 29,000 million pounds of scallops were located. So all of these have a total impact and shouldn't be viewed individually until you're ready to deal with an individual point. I'm not sure if you have a wind working group with the fishing industry and some of the public up in Maine, but by the last comment, it didn't sound like you had reached out. I would suggest that you do. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Heather Deese, Vice President of Programs with the Island Institute in Maine. I just wanted to clarify, based on following up on Chris's comment, that the Institute has just been working actively and independently for the last couple of years to try to share information actively with the fishing community and general members of the public and developers in the University of Maine and the council members, basically anybody who we can get to talk to us about what they know is going on with offshore wind energy. We are not working for Statoil or any other developer and will not do so. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear. We are doing this with funding from independent donors and our membership-based. So I just wanted to clarify that. I did also want to emphasize that we would think it would be very important to organize some kind of forum for the state of Maine and potentially fishermen from New Hampshire or Massachusetts who might be impacted or have interactions with this area, similar to the Massachusetts Task Force for Fisheries Issues. And we'd certainly hope that the state of Maine might support that kind of working group effort around this discussion as well.
Thank you. With that, I am going to say thank you very much, Brian, for the presentation and the update. We do need to move on. The scallop issue is one that I want to make sure we get through this afternoon, and there is a public hearing in this room this evening, the last of the public hearings for Amendment 18. So we do need to get through. While they're changing up, we will take a five-minute break. Please make it just the 5 minutes, and we will get going at 3:15. 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 At 3:15.